Now, first of all, let us look at the terms that we've been using. Terms apparently referring, in one way or another, to the I or to the me, including the term used in the title of this week's talk. So including that term, there are four such terms altogether. First of all, there's the term self. Then there's the term individual. Then there's the term ego. And then there's the term person. Each of these terms has a number of derivative forms. For instance, we say not only self, but we've got selfish, we've got unselfish, self-centered, self-realization. So in this way, there's quite a large family, as it were, of words. These four terms and all their derivatives. Now, if we take these four terms, together with all their shades of meaning, all the ways in which they can be used, and all the derivative forms, we notice something which is quite interesting, something which is quite relevant to our present purpose, something that will help us to solve the problem of individuality, true or false. We notice, if we examine them, that all these words, the four original words and their derivatives, all these words can be used in two different ways, or classified in two different groups, one positive and one negative. In other words, each of the four words has a double meaning, can be used in two different, even two opposed, senses. One good and one bad. And it's for this reason that we can speak of true individuality and false individuality, of the lower self and the higher self, of a person and also of a personality, of being egocentric and of being ego-directed. Each of these, therefore, we may say, is to be both cultivated and eradicated, depending on the sense in which the word is used, whether positive or negative. Now, at this point, a third question arises. And the question is, what is the basis of the distinction? That is to say, the distinction between the positive and the negative usages of the four words. And in order to answer this question, we must go back to last week's lecture, back to the question of alienated awareness. We saw that alienated awareness arose due to one's failure to experience oneself, especially to experience one's feelings and one's emotions, particularly negative feelings and negative emotions. Now, this failure tends to create in us a split. This is why it's so disastrous. It tends to create in us a split. A split between that part of oneself which one continues to experience, or to allow oneself to experience, and that part of oneself which one no longer experiences, which one has ceased to experience, or at least which one experiences only intermittently and very imperfectly, very partially. Or, we may say, that the split is between the conscious and the unconscious. Now, because one refuses to experience a certain part of oneself, it does not follow that that part ceases to exist. It does not mean that that part is no longer alive, that it has, by our refusal to experience it, has been killed off, as it were. whether we know it or not, that part is still very much alive. Not only alive, but kicking. It still makes its presence felt, even though it is not seen. Now we all know that from time to time we are subject to what we call moods, often rather negative moods. Sometimes we feel, say, depressed, or we feel angry, or we feel apprehensive. It just comes over us. It just takes possession of us, and we don't know why. We don't know where the mood comes from. We don't know its origin, its causation. And we say, or at least we think, when the mood is on us, or at least we say, or we think it afterwards, when the mood has passed away, we say that we are not, or that we were not, ourselves. Because so long as the mood persists, and to the extent that the mood persists, we feel, for the time being, as though, almost, we were somebody else. Now, in many cases, these moods are due to the subterranean activity of unacknowledged parts, or if you like, aspects of ourselves. And from this follows an interesting and important conclusion. We've seen that when subject to moods, we say, or we can say, that we are not ourselves, that for the time being we are, as it were, somebody else. Now, what does this mean? It means, if we reflect on it, that we are in fact not so much a self as a succession of selves. Or we may say, we are more like a bundle of selves. Not just a self, the same self all the way through, but a bundle of selves, like a bundle of sticks, of which only one is usually operative at any one time. There isn't just one unified, completely integrated, continually operative self in us, as we tend to assume. We can even say that we're a collection of selves, each of which is battling for supremacy. And this explains why we so often fail to do things that we have decided to do. For instance, we decide to get up early in the morning. So we assume that the same self is operative all the time, all the way through. The self that makes the decision, the self that carries out the action, is one and the same. But in fact, it is not so. One self decides at night, before we go to sleep, to get up early in the morning. But then what happens? When we wake up, we say we, when we wake up we find that in the interval, in the course of the night, another self has, as it were, come on duty. The old one is no longer there, and the new self, the self that's now on duty in the morning, he doesn't want to get up. So we stay in bed. This is what happens. So, we being half aware that, well, we decided to do something but we're not doing it, we sort of vaguely wonder what has happened. So we're now in a position to answer our question. We can now see the basis of the distinction between the good and the bad usages of the words individuality, self, person, and ego. Good refers to a higher degree of unification and integration. Bad refers to a lower degree of unification and integration. A true individuality is a more integrated individuality. A false individuality is that which is less integrated. True individuality, therefore, is to be developed, and false individuality is not to be developed. And the same applies to the higher, to the lower self, etc. In other words, it's integration itself that is to be developed. And we integrate in the first place by recovering and acknowledging those parts of ourselves, those aspects of ourselves which we had disowned, by allowing ourselves to experience them once again. This is what we may term integration on the level.